Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. I'll be talking today with Finnish choreographer Raisa Punkki about her dance company's work Controle, her response to the current era of escalating social media frenzy. Also stopping by, San Francisco-based artist Seth Eisen to discuss Out of Sight, a two-part performance-driven walking tour through the streets of San Francisco along landmark locations from the city's rich queer history. We'll also be joined in studio by three performers who will sing, Sienna Williams, Earl Alfred Paus, and J.P. Jones, who will sing live on the air. From the New Century Chamber Orchestra, we'll meet with Executive Director Philip Wilder, who shares details about the ensemble's collaboration with the Zurich Chamber Orchestra in a special concert tomorrow evening at the Herbst Theater. Plus, Open Air's regular contributor and critic-at-large Peter Robinson will discuss an upcoming event at the Sausalito Library titled We'll Always Have Paris, with special guest, a conversation with Noah Griffin, founder and artistic director of the Cole Porter Society, about Cole Porter's connections to the City of Light. Springtime in Paris sounds like a song. Stay with us. Some of the music of composer Aaron Gold, who's being heard as part of the music background for Controle, the latest work from Finnish composer Raisa Punkki. As a response to our current era of escalating social media frenzy and its fleshless interaction, Punkki's latest work explores what it means to be in control, between control, out of control, and by extension, what it means to set controls for oneself for this collaborative project that's at ODC. Raisa Punkki is a San Francisco-based dance artist who was born and raised in Finland. She's been in San Francisco since 2003, founding her own dance company, Punkki Co., a couple of years later. She's received many awards and grants both here and in Europe and has toured internationally, and it's a pleasure to welcome her back to our studios.
Thank you, David.
And she's joined by the composer we just heard, who made a recent appearance on Open Air here as a composer for Kristen Damrow Company's production of Ames, Aaron Gold. Aaron has created music for a variety of dance companies. He was born here in California, but raised in the Czech Republic. He received a BFA in jazz and contemplative studies at the University of Michigan. Once again, Aaron, seems like you're going to be our resident composer here on Open Air. Welcome.
Thanks for having me again. I appreciate you.
So, Raisa, tell us a little bit about how you wanted to get this project out on the ground.
This started about that social media frenzy, like you said, because it started to be too much for me. And I had to stop from going into any social media at some point after the election. And then I started to decided to see that what are the means to actually control it myself in my own life, still using it as a means of communication, because it seems to be very important, especially if you have a performance coming. And then I I started to think about the word control and gathered collaborators with me, a light designer, Jack Butler, I had been working before, and then Aaron, of course, and I was working at that time, I was working with Aaron, this was about a year ago, in a previous piece. And then also visual designer Alice Malia, who has also been collaborating with me before.
Interesting that you've chosen an artistic response, especially given this last election. I was hoped that, you know, some of those self-storage places would take people and we could just self-store for a few years. But good for
I
you.
I like that.
Just check out for a while.
Yeah, good for you for bringing something to the stage. Now, your past productions have featured all female casts, mm-hmm. and a great deal of use of masks. Now, how is mm-hmm. this different? You're using some male performers as well this time around.
Yes. I have actually three male dancers and then two female dancers. And then Alice, who is a visual designer, she's also a visual artist. She's also performing.
And the music coming from Aaron Gold. Aaron, how are you? You've written for so many dance companies. How are you adapting? Are you looking at what race is presenting and then creating your music to go with it? Or how? Give us a little insight into the creative process there.
Well, this project was perfectly timed because we had just finished our show, A Room of Our Own, for the SF International Arts Festival. And that was our first show together. And so that was a great introduction to her work. I had been, as a collaborator, I'd been a fan of her work for several years. I saw a show that she did. It was like a preview. I think it was Untitled 2. Untitled 2 at our friend's sort of like DIY art space, Human Creature Dance Theater Studios, and I was just blown away. It was like it was easily the most dynamic partnering I had seen up until that point. And I was like, oh man, I was freaking out, and I was like, oh, she was working with a really amazing composer at the time, and I just sort of put it out there, like, oh, one day I'd like to do that. You know? And so, as the fates had it, it worked out. And Risa gives me a lot of, or for this project specifically, gave me a lot of freedom. And so we had, you know, we were sort of like high off of our last show, and we had a meeting and talked about control, and I just got really excited about it, and then just started writing and sort of like went into this weird sound design trance, and then sent her a bunch of music, and you know, thankfully it resonated, and you know, we're always tweaking it, and I wrote more music than ended up being in the show, which I think is good.
And it was really nice because he's been sitting at the rehearsals now last month mm-hmm. all the time. That's mm-hmm. amazing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's a really rare opportunity to have that. Mm-hmm. And because we can just look at each other if something works, it's mm-hmm. in a movement and then the sound also, and it's like, oh yeah, mm-hmm. then it's amazing. Yeah.
Tell us about your collaboration with Alice.
I've been working with Alice for a while, and it was really exciting to have her be on stage also.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, so she will be performing as well and creating as we go, which is very, very nice. Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit more about what we will actually see on the stage.
Oh, we will see beautiful light design, and then we talked about that seen and not be seen, which comes with the light. We've been working with the light, and then also the Alice, what Alice is creating is helping us to work around that also. And of course, it's nonstop. Mm-hmm. A lot of movement. Mm-hmm. I don't think people get bored.
That must be a challenge for you as well, Aaron, to create that momentum.
Yeah, it's nonstop, but then there's also like really refreshing moments of stillness. It's just so dynamic. Risa's choreography is really dynamic and very specific to her, which I think it's like unapologetically weird and and really just super authentically her. And so I encourage...
Weird is good.
I know, it's amazing. It's like I feel so at home in her work, which is fun. Mm-hmm. So I encourage people to check it out because you're in for an experience.
And I've read about these paper sculptures that are key to this production.
Yes, and those will be prepared on stage. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And tell us a little bit more about what's in the works for Punky after this. Is this a part of going to be touring, you think?
I don't know. I wish we could be touring. We'll see what happens. There's always something coming. Mm-hmm. But I don't do work if it doesn't come really like I have to do it. I don't see otherwise point.
And Aaron, are you continuing work with other dance companies?
I am, yeah. I have some things down the pipeline, yeah.
Well, we'll have to have you back for that.
Thanks.
Raisa Punky presents Controle. It's at ODC Theater on 17th Street. Information at odc.org?
I think it's .dance.
odc.dance/Controle.
There we go. And the performances are the 15th, 16th, and 17th, all at 8 p.m. ODC Theater's at 17th Street in San Francisco. You'll enjoy some more of Aaron's music in the background here. Let's have you on again for the next production. Raisa, Aaron, thanks for coming in.
Thank you
so much.
ODCTheater.org will provide you all the links necessary to see the next Punky performances this weekend, starting tonight at ODC Theater in San Francisco. It's a Romanian dance of Bartok, music that will be heard Friday evening, early evening, with the New Century Chamber Orchestra in collaboration with the Zurich Chamber Orchestra. And my special guest is Philip Wilder. He's the executive director now in his fourth season at the New Century Chamber Orchestra. His recent major task has been ushering in a new artistic partner for the ensemble, Daniel Hope, and coordinating a musical exchange in collaboration with the Zurich Chamber Orchestra. I feel I should mention some of Philip's creds before we have our conversation. He's been executive director of communications for the Eastman School of Music, founding artistic and executive director with Sing with Haiti, a not-for-profit organization supporting the Holy Trinity Music School in Port-au-Prince, and countertenor with Chanticleer in some 1,000 performances and concerts around the world, later becoming artistic administrator, assistant music director, and founding director of education. He also launched the annual Chanticleer Youth Choral Festival for San Francisco Bay Area high school students. Philip, a pleasure to have you here in our studios.
It's great
again to
be back. Thank you for having me.
Indeed. And it must be a bit of a change for you going from all of this singing background to people without singing. You know, you're mostly working with instrumentalists.
Yeah, it's true. I actually got started as a student, as a pianist, and went to the Eastman School of Music for piano in Oregon. And one of the major parts of my tasks there was being an accompanist in one of the violin studios of Charlie Castleman's studio. So I'm I had a lot of education around that. So it's kind of a full circle for me coming back home to string instruments.
I'll put in a side plug for an Eastman connection. We're I play with the Peninsula Symphony, and this weekend we're doing Howard Hanson's Symphony No. 2, longtime director of the Eastman School
of
Music.
Yeah, for sure. And the theme music of Interlochen Arts Academy.
Right. So tell us how Daniel Hope was selected, first of all. I know you have a very clear method in the madness, so to speak, of not calling him a director or a conductor,
right?
Because of the ensemble by its very nature.
Well, we're in a transition right now because last year Nadja Salerno Sonnenberg, who was our music director for nearly 10 years, stepped down, and we've been in a search process. And Daniel came to us, I believe it was in 2016, for his first concert with the orchestra. And I had known Daniel for quite some time when I was vice president of 21C Media Group in New York. He was one of our clients and just one of the most extraordinary musicians I've ever met, and just so creative in all of the things that he does. I mean, he's an author, a filmmaker, a really clever programmer, and all of the recordings that he's done for both Warner and for now Deutsche Grammophon are all based on really interesting themes, and he just is a very interesting guy. And so we thought, of course, he would be the perfect person. And he's also a well-known chamber musician, having been in the Beaux-Arts Trio. I know a lot of Bay Area audiences would know him through that, and through music at Menlo and performances there. So he just seemed like a perfect fit to be with us for we signed a 3-year contract with him.
Fantastic. And such a happy copacetic relationship as him being the music director for the Zurich Chamber Orchestra.
Yes, and he runs that in exactly the same way, where he does not conduct. He leads from the concertmaster chair with his violin. So it's extraordinary. I just came from rehearsal and was listening to Zurich. It's a very different sound from us. It's going to be a really fun thing to see us side by side. And it's fun to see him in different ways,
right,
in the same sort of situation.
It's funny you should mention that, because I was in a rehearsal with an orchestra last night whose music director is Dawn Harms.
Of course, with our associate concertmaster.
And she was saying that, coincidentally, one of the challenges is the pitch center, in that Zurich tunes to a 442, which maybe we should get this inside baseball out to the public, what that means.
Well, they're different. They're slightly different ways of tuning. So that would be what Zurich tunes to. It's a slightly higher pitched than 440, which is it's the vibrations of the string at A. So what I noticed already this morning is that it gives them a little bit brighter sound. Everything's just a little bit more sunny in a way.
Interesting, yeah.
So it will be interesting to see. As soon as we're done here, I'm going to go hear the very first combined rehearsal of the two orchestras together. So it'll be fun to hear how that meshes when we're just slightly used to different things.
Right. And this concert is happening at the unusual time of 5:30.
Yes.
Which makes it convenient for a couple of ways. If you'd like to then go to the gala afterwards, you're right in the same building. Or if you have other plans, you can still catch a New Century concert.
Exactly. And you know, in these days, getting around in San Francisco, what better way to spend rush hour than to go to a lovely concert? And then once we're done, maybe the bridge will look a little bit better.
And a little brighter, for that matter. You mentioned that some of the recordings that Daniel has going are some reimagined works, including The Four Seasons, recomposed by Max Richter.
Yeah, now this is an incredible recording. Max Richter is I think he's just about to be 52 in the next week, British composer who's completely reimagined the ubiquitous Vivaldi Four Seasons that we all know so well. And this recording I think it's probably one of the best-selling classical recordings in the last 10 years, selling well into the hundreds of thousands of copies, and is also very popular with a lot of filmmakers. You'll hear it around. One of the things I've noticed it recently was on Netflix series Chef's Table, which is about chefs, and a really popular series they have is the theme music of that. So it's really fun to hear it, and every time I listen to this, you hear something new that you didn't expect with Vivaldi's Four Seasons.
Well, let's have a little taste of Summer 3, Vivaldi's Four Seasons, recomposed by Max Richter, something that you'll hear as a taste of at the New Century Chamber Orchestra tomorrow, late afternoon, 5:30, and then more with Daniel Hope, the executive director of the New Century Chamber Orchestra. Slightly reimagined summer, one of the three summers that is part of the Four Seasons, recomposed by Max Richter, and music that you'll hear as part of the New Century Chamber Orchestra's concert Friday evening at 5:30 at the Herbst Theater, talking with Philip Wilder, executive director of the ensemble. Philip, great fun to hear that. Tell us more about the program that's going to be preceding the big gala.
Yes, well, it's kind of a War Horses of String Repertoire, which is fun to have that particular piece that Max Richter recomposed, because Vivaldi's Four Seasons is such a big part of the repertoire. To hear it sort of take a left turn into Max Richter is a lot of fun. We're doing Bartok's Romanian Dances. That'll be just New Century Chamber Orchestra. The Zurich Orchestra is doing the Recomposed and a Mozart Divertimento, and then we're going to combine for Grieg's Holberg Suite, and then there will be a few other surprises that aren't printed.
Oh, okay,
so
well,
don't miss it.
And once again, the reason for the concert being at 5:30 is that there's a wonderful gala which follows the concert, individually priced, of course. If you're interested in information on that, go to ncco.org. What is the gala benefiting? The education program, I believe.
Yeah, all of our programs, specifically education and all the artistic programs, for sure. So it's our biggest fundraiser of the year, so we depend on that, and it's a great party. So if you want to splurge evening and do the whole thing, please give us a call.
For the Soiree Suisse Gala,
yes.
Is a dream call. celebrating Philip Wilder. Now I'm really messing things up. celebrating Daniel Hope and the Zurich Chamber Orchestra, collaboration with the New Century Chamber Orchestra. Once again, a pleasure to have. We're just enjoy the ensemble so much. It's one of our favorite ensembles here in San Francisco.
Thank you.
Philip, thanks for coming in. We'll get you in again for the next concerts down the road. And I understand an international tour is in the works
for
a season ahead.
More to come.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Music of Holberg now that you'll hear tomorrow at the concert. Thank you. Edvard Grieg's Holberg Suite. Music that will be heard tomorrow afternoon, late afternoon, 5:30. Great time for concert if you've got other plans in the evening. It's only going to be an hour. It's music from the New Century Chamber Orchestra with the Zurich Chamber Orchestra. Not only the Holberg Suite, a Mozart Divertimento, which will feature also Vivaldi's reimagined Four Seasons, recomposed by Max Richter, featuring the new music director, artistic partner of the New Century Chamber Orchestra, Daniel Hope as solo violinist, and Béla Bartók's Romanian folk dances. And as we heard from Phil Wilder, a surprise or two. 5:30 at the Herbst Theater, a gala to follow if you'd like to support their educational efforts. All the information at ncco.org. iZen is proud to announce the world premiere of Out of Sight, a two-part performance event interpreting San Francisco's rich queer history on the sites where it all began. Part one will be taking place as we speak in this time of month through the 25th in North Beach, part two later on in the Tenderloin in May. It's the brainchild of Seth Eisen, who's a San Francisco-based artist creating a hybrid of live performance and visual media with a healthy dose of activism in the case of this latest project. For some 25 years, Seth has staged performance pieces, street spectacles, and installations, and has curated and appeared in a number of collaborative projects created with other Bay Area artists. In 2007, he founded iZen Presents, kind of a little play on his name, Eisen, I and then Zen, a transdisciplinary theater company that unearths and elevates the stories of queer ancestors. Seth, I'm glad you made it out of the traffic of the bridge and made
Thank
it to our
you,
fair
David.
Studios.
So happy to be here.
Welcome, indeed. And you're joined by several of the performers that are going to be a part of this event. J.P. Jones has sung with the Philharmonia Baroque, the Grace Cathedral Choir of Men and Boys, the Al McNeil Jubilee Singers, L.A. Master Chorale, and L.A. Opera Course on the formal side, in addition to lots of musical theater for which he not only performs but also directs. J.P., welcome to you.
Hello. Nice to be here.
And Earl Alfred Paus. Roles include leading roles in Pippin, West Side Story, and Hair in his resume. He's also a long-standing member of the Thrill Peddlers and revivals of Cockett's musicals. Earl's collaborative cabaret, Palace of Trash, is at the Stud every third Sunday of the month, something I'm going to have to catch. He also dances Filipino folk dance and hip-hop with Collarts. Earl, welcome to you.
Great. Hi. Welcome.
Thank and you. Sienna Williams, who has several roles, is an actor, dancer, vocalist, and Alzheimer's researcher who is dedicated to creating art with the intention of provoking social thought as a catalyst for change. Most recently, she performed with Detour Dance and presented her own work as part of SPF 10. Sienna, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Seth, so you've discovered some interesting characters in your research for this project. Tell us a little bit about, let's say, Babe Bean.
Oh, Babe Bean. Well, you may know that although we have more awareness of trans people in our contemporary life, trans people have been around forever, and there are lots of stories that have come out thanks to research that was done starting really in the 70s. An author named Lou Sullivan was a trans person in the 70s and 80s. Unfortunately, he died of AIDS, I believe, in the early 90s, I want to say, but he did incredible research in the San Francisco Public Library History Department and GLBT Historical Society have all of Lou Sullivan's papers on Babe Bean. Babe Bean is not actually in the North Beach tour, but it's a character we've been working on for the other tour. Milton Mattson is the trans man who was a late 19th and early 20th century trans man who appears prominently in this first tour, which we're really excited about. It's quite a dazzling story because he is caught and arrested by the police who were, you know, bringing in the 1863 laws of cross-dressing. You couldn't dress as the opposite sex of your biological sex, and was imprisoned. And then the only way he was able to get bail was being sold to a dime museum and being able to perform as a man, but had to dress in women's clothes on the street. So,
wow.
Very interesting life and story that we're bringing to life with this first tour, and you get to meet Milton Mattson in many different moments.
Neat. Well, when one mentions gay San Francisco, the first thing that comes to mind, of course, is the Castro and maybe the earlier history of Polk Street or Soma, depending on your present tastes,
right,
and inclinations.
Right.
But your part one begins in North Beach, maybe focuses on North Beach.
Yeah. Part of this has to do with the lost generation we talk about. Went to a restaurant in North Beach the other night and met someone who's been there. He's in his mid to late 50s, and he grew up in North Beach and said, you know, growing up as a young kid, he remembers there were gay bars all over. There were 50 or more of them, lesbian gay bars, and then bars where there were just a mix of different people where queer people were welcome. And he said, where did all the gays go? A lot of people died, and a lot of us were, moved out of North Beach for because of lots of reasons, gentrification, et cetera, et cetera. But there are no more gay bars in North Beach. So we're bringing together really 200 years of history of North Beach or more, starting with, honoring the Native American Two-Spirit culture of the Ohlone. I don't represent the Ohlone, but we have Two-Spirit people who are part of our troupe and who are talking about those histories and bringing those back all the way forward into the 1960s when all those bars started to disappear. So it's quite exciting for people, especially in their 70s and 80s, who lived through those eras and went, where did all the gays go?
Right.
Where
is
all the queer people?
So this is really a much more than a walking tour. It's a walking tour with performance, and you're actually getting some insight into some of these past locales.
Yeah, and I think what is different about ours is that the histories happen on the sites where they actually occurred. And then there's this really magical third thing that our audiences have been telling us about, that when you bring the history itself that's unknown and then the site together, there's this third thing that's born that is this kind of magical space in between that it's like you're somewhere where that doesn't exist anymore.
Mm.
Right?
Well, we'll talk about the narrative that's involved in the walking tour end of things, but let's hear a little bit of music next, and then we'll talk more with what are we going to hear first?
Well, I have a song, actually, from one of my characters. Her name is Beverly Shaw, and she was a nightclub singer in Mona's Bar, predominantly, which was a lesbian bar. And I'll give you a bit of her intro and give you a taste of her sound. As Mona did say, I did work as a taxi cab driver while I was singing for her, my humble beginnings. And I met very interesting people as a taxi driver, as you can imagine. One fare I'll never forget. She was a beacon of light on the corner of Columbus and Bay. I pulled up to her real smooth so that my back door was right at her feet. She got into my cab, and we were on a journey together. By the time that she left, I knew she was the woman for me. But I never saw her again. But I always thought that if I did see her again, I wouldn't waste any time. I would tell her, well, I would say, well, why don't I just sing you a song that I think says it better than I ever could? Once I had a secret love that lived within the heart of me. All too soon my secret love grew impatient to be free. So I told a friendly star the way that dreamers often do, just how wonderful you are and why I'm so in love with you. Now I shout it from the highest hills, even told the golden devil, dear.
love's no secret anymore.
So that's a bit of Bev Shaw.
Just beautiful. I had a little bit of Carnegie Hall for you there, too, in the headphones.
Yeah, I was wondering where that was coming from.
It's Sienna Williams performing Secret Love. What a great tune, too. There's a lot going on in those lyrics, that's for sure. Seth, so the characters are actually not just singing songs. They're inhabiting the characters and providing some of the narrative. Tell us a little bit about how that narrative was developed.
So I worked with a researcher that helped me actually develop my last project. His name is Jim Metzger, and we worked tirelessly for about a year working in the archives of the GLBT Historical Society, reading some of the incredible research of Nan Boyd and Amy Tsuyoshi and Aaron Birube, and also working with our partner Shaping San Francisco, who has incredible archives that are online on Found SF, with many articles and research they've been doing for many years. So really, we just got interested in the actual stories, and then started to work in what we call devised process of bringing the actors. You know, once I cast the show, we brought the actors in and started to tell stories. Like with Sienna, you know, we talked about Beverly being in San Francisco performing at this real hot spot in North Beach. Mona Sargent, you know, owned several clubs starting in the 1930s, and then brought big stars from Harlem and from all over the country. And Beverly Shaw became, you know, was a star here, and then opened up her own club, went to L.A. and started the Laurel Club, and had a whole other career. So we'd start a little bit at a time, but this is the wonderful thing of working with artists like this. You can do as much research as you want, but unless you have this kind of talent of people who can take those stories and embody them and then do the artistic research, then it really becomes alive for an audience. So I really, this is a full collaboration. So it started with Jim and I really reading as many books as we could about the subject and doing our research, but then bringing it to the artists, and then together in the studio at we're house artists at Counterpulse, and we developed this over 8 months, this material. So we, you know, wrote and rewrote like many versions of each script. Like with Earl, you know, we developed his character with another actor, Ryan Hayes, and there's this writer from the Bohemian area of the late 19th century whose name was Charles Warren Stoddard, and Yoni plays a Japanese man who comes here to the Bay Area. So it's very interesting to talk about what that was like for a white man to kind of be falling in love with an Asian man at the end of the 19th century. And then he becomes a very prominent artist, and then he fathers the very famous sculptor Isamu Noguchi. So it's a very fascinating story right there. And putting those two things together and bringing that to, quote-unquote, the stage, you know, on the street, was a really magical process, and it really took a lot of patience on the part of Earl and Ryan to really develop that piece. So they're, you know, a two-hander, if you will, you know, just like it's a little short play for two actors.
Right.
So.
Well, given all the research that's gone into the existing history, is this being preserved in some way, or is it just ephemeral for these live performances?
Well, I think that's a great question. I mean, you know, this all was a child of reading the historic context statement that was starting with research by Donna Graves and Shane Watson, who got funding from the National Park Service through the city of San Francisco to, you know, figure out how we're going to get, you know, 19 you know, historical LGBT sites in the country out of 91,000, how we're going to increase that. So if people are bringing more awareness to North Beach, that actually happened. There's 5 new ones now in North Beach. But there's a difference between a plaque and then actually seeing it alive on the streets. So hopefully many more audience members will come and see this. And then, David, they will have those histories to be able to tell and pass on. And we hope actually this work gets extended and we can bring it back, you know, after this short run of just, you know, it's really just 4 days, but six events for the North Beach tour.
Fantastic. Well, we heard the beautiful voice of Sienna Williams channeling Doris Day and others there for Secret Love. Let's hear from Earl and JP. What are we going to hear first?
I do play a character called Yone Noguchi, and like what Seth was talking about, he is Japanese, and he did come to San Francisco in 1893. He was really intrigued and longed to be part of the Bohemian Writers of the Bay. In the beginning of the show, I'm introduced as a poet who's living under the tall shadows of Orientalism. And I think writing that down, for me, it felt like I was really trying to give off the feeling of a generally patronizing and colonialist attitude where the West believed that they were superior to the Asians, to the Asian Pacific Islanders, and the Middle Eastern and of North African societies with that tagline. There is a bit of emotion coming from Yone, where he does balance the racism of the 1800s, which was faced not just then, but a little bit today, too. And I think that Yone is a very prideful character. He has to overcome a lot of things, like the depression that he was facing then, traveling from Japan and going to a new area, and then also at the same time trying to be a part of the SF literati scene, which was primarily white men. And so within his mind, I feel that he found a way to be recognized as an important figure, specifically with this show, where we bring to light the relationship he had with Charles Warren Stoddard, who was more of an out gay poet of his time, and Yone was not. He was a little bit more inside of himself. Charles Stoddard was known for his works, which was South Sea Idols and Kanaana, and so with that sense of fetishizing the Asians and Asian Pacific Islanders, I think that Yone jump-started that and used that as a building block for his own, for the acceptance of multicultural and a multi-generational queer relationship with Charles.
Well, I'm sorry to push you, but we just got to have some music. Would you like to do the ensemble number? Would you like to?
Yeah, let's do the ensemble number, because that actually JP was part of creating that, and it was created really with the cast and our composer Eli Malawan, and it really gives a flavor of all of the histories sort of in the North Beach that we're bringing together with these many different voices. So you'll get to hear three of the 14 cast members singing wow. singing a little bit. We're the bars, we're our community centers.
Fantastic. Music that you'll hear as part of Out of Sight. Hit it.
Say that again.
I'm ready for that drink.
Oh, okay. Yes, please.
Well, here we go, y'all.
Anybody want a cocktail who wants a drink? Come share your story. Be heard and be seen. We're happy you're here with our family of queers. Everybody here is welcome. Who wants a drink?
What's your story? How did you get here? Who are you?
She's asking lots of questions.
Where did you come from? And where are you going to? What did you leave behind? What are you hoping to find? Everybody here is welcome. Who wants a drink?
A little excerpt from Every Who Wants Drink. I certainly could use one after that, guys. Amazing performance as part of just three of the 14 people you'll hear being a part of this Out of Sight. On site in North Beach, part walking tour, part performance, all entertainment about queer history here in San Francisco. Seth, Sienna, JP, Arl, thank you so much for coming in today.
Of course.
Thank you for having us.
And Seth, more information at the website?
izen.org. You can get tickets there and lots more information. There's a little video there, too. You can see the cast.
EYEZEN.org.
Yeah.
Thank you all for coming in.
Thank you for having us. You want to give away tickets?
We could do that.
Yeah, why not? Maybe we could end with Earl's, with JP singing.
We've got to go to the next segment here. 415-841-4134.
Tickets for Saturday.
For Saturday at noon, walking tour. 415-841-4134. izen.org for more information.
I love Paris in the springtime. I love Paris in the fall. I love Paris in the winter when it drizzles. I love Paris in the summer when it sizzles. I love Paris every moment. Every moment of the year. I love Paris. Why do I love Paris? Because my love is here.
Oh, I love Paris, whether my love is there or not, springtime or any other time. And here to have a discussion with the director of the Cole Porter Society, Noah Griffin, is our regular contributor, Peter Robinson. Peter, tell us about this very special event in Sausalito.
Yeah, hi, David. Good to be here. And on the 29th of March, we're having a library soiree in Sausalito Library. It's called We'll Always Have Paris, and it's a kind of reflection on how, from the time of La Belle Epoque, from the early 20th century, Paris has been an attraction for songwriters, for movie makers, obviously for writers, poets, and has kind of gathered a persona which, as soon as you say the word Paris, immediately conjures up different types of images. And part of the event is to look at the culture of Paris. What is it about Paris that has drawn different people there at different times? So there'll be clips from movies. There'll be some recordings of different song singers, such as Edith Piaf, obviously the keen queen of Paris in every sense. Her husband, we call him Charles Aznavour in France. They call him Charles Aznavois, you know?
So we, ouch.
And that's what happens when you smoke too many gitans. There you are, you're in that little mix. But also, people like Cole Porter. He had a memorable time in Paris. It's probably what I call one of the turning points in his life. There, just after the First World War, he goes on to marry Linda, who would be with him until the time of her death. And, of course, he will write some of those numbers that lasted in his time, lasted after his time, and, of course, are still indeed popular today.
And who better to talk about that than the artistic director and founder of the Cole Porter Society, the indomitable, incomparable, mellifluous Noah Griffin. Welcome back to our studio.
It's always a pleasure to be here.
So, yeah. Cole Porter in Paris.
Well, he first went there in 1909 after he graduated from Worcester Academy, and he spent 2 months in Europe and spending most of his time in Paris, then came back at the beginning of World War I and was with the Duryea Relief Fund, although he fantasized that he was with the French Foreign Legion, and he put that story out. Was able to meet his wife there a couple of years later after the war concluded, and then really started his career there with a big 1928 show called Les Ambassadors, after which he came back to this country. And his first two big hits were in a show called Paris, which was a vehicle for Irene Bordoni. Ray Getz was the producer of the show. And the big songs out of that were Let's Misbehave and Let's Do It, which we all know and still sing to this day.
And which we heard Frank sing I Love Paris.
Of course.
One of his tunes.
Of all the people that did it, and there's a notable number of folks that did I Love Paris. I've got about two pages here.
Oh, my gosh.
The one Cole Porter liked, and you're not going to believe this, is Doris Day.
Oh. Speaking of Secret Love, which we just heard earlier, live in studio.
Yeah. But when I think of Cole Porter, listen to Cole Porter, to me, it's the topicality of his lyrics, the fact that he can take a tune, he can drop all sorts of, we might call it place names or ads inside his thing. And I'm thinking today, given how topical he was, if he was going to design a song, maybe what's happening in the political world, what's happening in our world today, what do you think it might have fascinated
him? I just happened to write one this morning. Don't know why, think the rules to me apply. Stormy Daniels, guess I'll get a small cocker spaniel. I'm lonely all the time. Such despair, thought Melania wouldn't care. Sleep alone now, since my mad affair, seeds I've sown now. Explaining all the time.
Well, thank you. That was on the spot, a little impromptu. I thought it might have been something to do with Blow Gabriel Blow, but in fact, I realized that what we were talking about here was Stormy Daniels, so it took me a time to make a little quick jump from one way or the other. Anyhow, let's focus on the show that he first did at Les Ambassadeurs, which is a nightclub. Attracting just the most important people in the city in 1928.
Correct.
What were the types of review songs that...
Looking at You is the one that is that comes from there. If you listen to the style of the music from Les Ambassadeurs, it's nothing that you've ever heard Cole Porter do. It's not the kind of song that was not like Misbehave or Let's Do It or any of the songs that came after that. And as a result, it was pretty much lost to history for 85 years. And it was found at the University of Pennsylvania and mysteriously and done in New York on 3 days' notice 3 years ago. We went, got the rights to bring it to the West Coast and debut it here. And now I sent it to Tony Bennett's folks. They didn't see anything in it worth recording. But nonetheless, it's just nice to have it as a piece of historical fact that Cole Porter on the way to becoming Cole Porter, essentially, which he did the next year with Let's Do It. The theme in of the song and the title Let's Do It was so controversial at the time, he had to add Let's Do It, Let's Fall in Love.
Yes, that's the kind of redeeming line when you get away with a lot of what could be confused with racism today, which has...
Well, the first original lines were, and I'm not even going to repeat them on the air, so they had to do it, birds do it, bees do it.
Educated,
please
do it.
Let's do it, let's fall in love. But even Cole had to have some censorship and rein himself back a little. He didn't pay much attention to those kinds of things. He was very irreverent at the time. It's only when he got burned a little that, he had to take back one of the lines on the Lindbergh kidnapping case, which was in one of his songs, because he thought it was very offensive at the time, so he himself censored it.
And of course, Paris was in many places a home to all different types of writers, poets, and I'm also thinking in terms of musicians that African American musicians often felt more at home in the 1920s and 30s in Paris than they did even here in their own country.
Well, Bricktop started her famous nightclub in Paris in the 1920s, and Josephine Baker started off there. A number of other folks got their start there at the nightclub. And Cole Porter would come in. She didn't know who he was. It's this little fellow that would come and sit in the front row, and she would do his songs. And somebody said later on, do you know who that is that's coming in every night? I said, no. She just about fainted. He adopted her and had her teach the Charleston to all of his folks there. And F. Scott Fitzgerald said his only claim to fame in Paris was that he discovered Bricktop before Cole Porter.
Well, here's a piece of music, Sidney Bechet. It's actually the opening theme from Midnight in Paris, Woody Bogart. And I think to some extent, he's a good example of a player who was playing music in the early 1950s,
yes,
one of many who came because Paris had an appreciation with the other parts of the country. Now, this will be one of the pieces we'll be playing at the Sausalito Library on the 29th. The event is called We'll Always Have Paris, which, of course, is the closing line in that great Bogart movie, Casablanca. But, Noah, you too have got an event coming up.
We're going to be doing an event on March the 25th at the Golden Gate Yacht Club, which is open to the public. I'll be with Claire D., an internationally known vocalist and singer. We'll be doing some Cole Porter there, and it's at www.thecoleportersociety.org. You can pick up tickets.
And, yeah, for the Sausalito Library, we have a phone number for information on this particular event. It's 415-381-6671. And that is always, we'll always have Paris on the 29th. Now, you have a performer who I think is going to sing every time we say goodbye.
Claire D. and I will be doing that song together, which is a wonderful, not very well-known Cole Porter song, but certainly one that's appreciated by the aficionados.
Peter Robinson, Noah Griffin, let's do it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That's Open Air for this Thursday, March 15th. Our shows are archived at kalw.org. Thanks to producer Neil Swinkles for herding cats and keeping the calendar straight. If you've got a show segment suggestion, by all means, send me an email, david@kalw.org.
Let's do it. Let's fall in love in Spain.
This is KALW San Francisco. An hour of news from the BBC is next. It's 2 o'clock.